Welcome to the world of Mark's Money Mind, coming to you from the Rocky Mountain town of Crested Butte, Colorado. I'm your host, Mark Troutman, CFP. This educational, personal finance show combines money lessons, timely topics, personal stories, and community wisdom to help listeners and viewers master their finances to enjoy a stress-free life of financial freedom. I've just gotten back from the Economy Conference in Cincinnati, Ohio, where I was a panelist for a case study presentation on the main stage on Sunday, and there were 500 people in attendance, and we had just an awesome time for a number of days. Many of us got in there on Wednesday, and we were going all weekend, and I have pretty much lost my voice, so I apologize for that in advance. On the case study panel that I was on, we utilized a number of tools that we will actually be discussing here on the podcast today. So last week, we talked about the net worth statement, and that's one of the things that we do in all case studies. We create a net worth statement, which includes all of the assets and all of your liabilities, and assets minus liabilities equals net worth. And as you recall, that is a snapshot in time. Typically, people will do it as of a year end, a month end, a quarter end, what have you. This week, we are going to talk about the income and expense statement, or tracking your income and expenses. Those are done over a period of time. So typically you will do it on a monthly, quarterly, or annual basis. Today we're going to talk about how you create an income and expense statement and track that going forward. The first thing you need to do is obviously gather the information so you can fill it all out. This is a good time of year to do it because we are almost at the end of March here. And typically when you are trying to figure out what your kind of expense run rate is, looking back over 3 months is very beneficial because you will typically capture a majority of your expenses that are ongoing over a 3 month period. Now, there will be some things that will slip through the cracks. If you only pay a bill, let's say once a year, maybe it's property taxes or homeowners insurance, you will need to factor that into the equation. But for the most part, if you look back over 3 months, you have a pretty good understanding of your expenses. We are getting very close to the end of the quarter here. And so this is a great point in time to look back over the last 3 months and capture all of those expenses. What will you need in order to do that? Well, the first thing is, how much did we make? So our paycheck, page stub, is very beneficial and has a lot of information on it. And we will use that as a source of information for the income. It will also include a number of line items for expenses as well. If you're self-employed, maybe you give yourself a monthly stipend so you can include that. It will be a little bit more challenging because you will need to think about how you pay your taxes and so forth to make sure you're capturing that correctly. Or maybe you make estimated tax payments. And then on the expense side, your checking account activity is very helpful. Also, any credit card activity that you have, any activity in savings accounts if you pay expenses directly from savings accounts, and any other forms of payment you may use, like cash, which many people don't really use much anymore. Things like Venmo, Zelle, Cash App, what have you, you can just pull up your activity in those and see where money has been going in those apps. How do you do this? Once we have the information, we need to organize it. But we've talked about the source of the information. Now we need to figure out how to put it in some order that we can utilize it. So one option is obviously just pen and paper. Many people use spreadsheets. You can create your own spreadsheet. You could also use a spreadsheet template. If you do a Google search, you will find plenty of them. You could use an app. There are a number of apps out there that will do this for you or help you do this. You could use customized software. I use Quicken, for example. There's also YNAB, Y-N-A-B, which used to be you need a budget, but now it's just YNAB. And that is very popular in the personal finance space. The first thing to do is I like to think of things in kind of three broad categories: income, saving and investing, and then your expenses. So let's start with income. In order to get your income, you can look at your pay stub, and the pay stub itself has a lot of information. Most paychecks will include your current pay period information and year-to-date information. I would suggest creating a column for every month. So you could get your paychecks from the month of January, your paychecks from the month of February, and your paychecks from the month of March. And I would look at the pay period figures. And then if you get paid more than once a month, you'll need to add however many paychecks you have in a month together. Look for a line item, gross income. And then put the monthly gross income in each one of the columns, one for January, one for February, and one for March. The next category would be saving and investment. And I like to put this as the second category because I like to pay myself first and make sure that saving and investing is taken care of. And that goes back to the other episode, make some, save and invest, live on the rest. So basically prioritize saving. So where do we get our savings figures from? Many people have some kind of contribution to a retirement plan at work, for example, or maybe you even have a savings plan at work, or you have an HSA health savings account. If you have a high deductible health insurance plan, you may have an associated HSA and your employer may even contribute to that. You potentially have a pension, and you may have different flavors of 401k or 403b. They may come in traditional, which would be pre-tax deduction, or Roth, which is after-tax deduction. And those usually will be identified on your paychecks separately. You can collect the information from your paycheck for all of these savings account types. I would separate them into separate line items so that you can see what's going in your traditional 401k, for example, or your Roth 401k, or if you have a pension, how much is going into an HSA if you have it. Then I would look at your savings and checking account activity to see if you have any contributions to a traditional IRA, for example, or a Roth IRA, any money that you're directing from your paycheck or from your checking account to a savings account. You can include that in this section. And then any money that you contribute to a brokerage account, for example, from your checking account, your paycheck directly, or savings account, you can include that in here as well. And the third section is where all of your expenses come into play. And I like to categorize these into kind of broad categories. So this would be taxes, like income taxes, housing, transportation, food, health, other, and debt payments. This is where you would need to either comb through your checking account, credit cards, cash, Venmo, Zelle, things like that, to find all of the expenses and put them in the appropriate categories. Now, there is a way to do this, which makes this a little easier. Many banks and credit card companies give you the ability to generate reports. I know my bank does this and my credit card issuers do this. You can basically go online and find an area where you can generate a report. And typically you can put in dates, so when you want the report to start and end. And often, in most cases, it will allow you to let them categorize those expenses into categories, which then you can just take those totals and drop them into those broad categories for each month. So you could run a report for January. You could run a report for February. You could run a report for March. And then you would have all the figures you need to put into all of those expense categories. So on the income tax side, typically that information is going to come from your paycheck. So this would include things like federal tax withholding, state tax withholding, local tax withholding, FICA taxes, which is Social Security, and Medicare. And if you make estimated tax payments on your own, you could include that in this category. If you're self-employed, you're likely submitting estimated tax payments as well. You could include that here. So I would just capture all of your income taxes in that one broad category. You could just label it taxes. Then the next broad category would be housing. In here, you would include your mortgage payment if you have one, your rent if you're a renter. You would include property taxes if you pay them separately. Sometimes they're included in your mortgage payment as part of an escrow payment. Same with insurance. If you have homeowner's insurance, if you own your home, it may be included in your mortgage already. If not, you may have to seek that out. That could be an annual amount, and you could find out how much you pay annually and then just divide it equally among the year and put that same amount in the housing category for each month. Maintenance, any maintenance expenses relative to your housing situation, and utilities. The next broad category would be transportation. That includes any auto loans if you have them, any gas, any electric if you drive an electric vehicle, any insurance for your vehicles, any maintenance costs for your vehicles, any public transit you take. Maybe you don't own a car, but you have a bus pass or a rail pass. I would include that here. Any Ubers or Lyfts or anything like that that you take, I would include that in this section as well. And the next broad category is food. And here I would include groceries and eating out, but I do like to separate those out into sub-line items because I think it's very interesting to see how much you're spending on eating out. That is an area that a lot of people spend a considerable amount of money on in some cases. And it is also an area that is easy to improve or reduce if you're looking for areas to cut your expenses, for example. Not absolutely have to do it, but it is good to see how much you're spending in that category. And if it's important to you, great. If it's not, maybe it's an area that you could improve upon. The next main area would be health. In there, I would include health insurance. And again, you may see some health insurance premium on your paycheck. So I would include that amount from your paycheck in here. Any health insurance you may buy directly, I would include that. I would also include your medical out-of-pocket expenses, your medicine and prescriptions, any dental and vision costs. I would include that all under health. And the next broad category is where we start to collect the information on things that don't fit in the categories previously. I like to just look at it as an other category, but I do subcategorize things like clothing, personal care, household items, services, subscriptions, entertainment and recreation, any hobbies, travel, charity, pets. Those are just examples that could be line items underneath the other category. And then any other miscellaneous categories that you could think of. And then the last major area would be debt payments. You've collected the information from your credit cards, so I wouldn't include the payment to your credit card because effectively you've captured most, if not all of that, in the categorization of your credit card charges. So I would include the interest on the credit card here. I would include any payments you're making for past balances exceeding the current charges here. Now, I would include student loans. I would include any home equity loans or lines of credit, any personal loans you may have. I would collectively put all of your debt payments. And again, you may want to subcategorize all of those individually and then total them up for your total debt payment figure. So you will have a section for your gross income. You will have a total for your savings and investment, and you would subtract that from gross income. Then you would subtract out your total expenses. and you will be left with a figure, and it could be a positive number, it could be a negative number. If it's a negative number, it's possible that you are spending more than you earn and your credit card balances are increasing as a result. That would be one reason you may have a negative number. If you have a positive number, that means there's excess money that is left over that could be utilized for savings, or potentially something is not being captured. You will need to find out why it's missing. Then once you have all of this laid out and you have, now you have your nice little spreadsheet, you've got your categories, you're tabulating everything for the months. You've got January, February, and soon you'll have March. Then I would look at, how do we analyze this information? You can create a new column, which will just calculate percentages. I would be dividing all of the items by gross income. So gross income will be the denominator. Total savings divided by gross income will give you your savings rate. Total expenses divided by income will give you your expense rate. And then I would also calculate out those main categories. What percentage is going to income tax? What percentage is going to housing? What percentage is going to transportation, food, health, etc.? And then under other, you may want to figure out the percentages for each of those line items, and the same with debt. You can also calculate the percentages for total debt or each individual debt item. And then you can start to look at, well, where am I spending or potentially saving most of my money? And is that where I want to do that? You start to figure out, where is most of my money going? Does it meet my values? Am I saving enough? Is that an appropriate savings rate for my goals? Am I spending a lot in a specific category that doesn't meet my values, for example? And is there a way to improve that? I'm a big fan of automating savings and investment. One thing to consider is, if your savings rate is not where you would like it to be, how could you increase it by automation? One way to do that would be through any payroll deductions that you can do. For example, if you want to increase your 401k contribution, or if you're going to make contributions outside of your paycheck, I would consider increasing your automated payment to that, whether it's your IRA, your savings account, your brokerage account. Do it automatically and right after your paycheck hits. So maybe a day or two after, so you don't get used to that being in your checking account and seeing a large number and saying, oh, I'll just go spend that on whatever. Then the last thing is to think about, what is the best method to do this on a continual basis? This shouldn't be a once and done process where you're just doing this on this one-off basis and saying, okay, I see what it is. But I would do this on an ongoing basis. I think it's great if you can do it monthly. I think quarterly is the least frequent you should do it, but I'm a big fan of doing this monthly. In this case, we're looking in the rearview mirror, and there's not a lot you can do after the fact. So I think it's good to be doing this on a continuous basis so you can act in the moment when you see things that you want to make changes to. And I think it's important to find a process that works for you. Like I said, I use Quicken. It works for me. I'm very comfortable with it. It suits my accountant mindset. For other people, that may be just too much work or too detailed. My categorization is very detailed. I like that, but maybe that's overkill for you. Some people like to use custom software like YNAB, or an app like Spending Tracker. That's what my high school students use, and I'll make sure to put that in the show notes. And many people have created personalized spreadsheets, custom spreadsheets that suit their particular needs. My daughter does this, and it works great for her. Or you can choose from the many spreadsheet templates that are available online. If you do a Google search, you'll find plenty of them, and many of them are free, or if they have a cost, it's nominal. Find whatever works for you. Continue to use it so you're monitoring your expenses. Some people will also use a budget and try to stick to that. I'm kind of more the, I guess you would call, I don't want to say anti-budget, but kind of the non-budgeter, where I always had made sure my savings were taken care of first and whatever was left over was what I would spend. I didn't need to budget per se, but some people find budgeting is more beneficial, where they're basically identifying how much they're going to spend in a category and then tracking how well they're doing against their goal. But whatever works for you is what you should do. And if it isn't working, try something else. For many people who find something is not working for them, it's usually because it's overly complicated. Keep it as simple as possible so that you can continue to do this and make it a priority. I hope you found this helpful and beneficial for meeting your goals going forward. And now let's go to a listener question. This comes in from Steve, and he asks, how did you develop a habit, comfort, change in saving / investing mindset with a spending bucket, the fun money? Very straight and to the point. Thank you, Steve, for sending this in. So I think the best way to answer this is thinking about your different mindsets from when you are an accumulator to when you are a decumulator, or you're in the retirement phase. In the accumulation stage, you are saving typically a percentage of your income. You're doing it on a consistent basis. It's coming out of your paycheck or your checking account and going into your investment account. And you don't give it a lot of thought. You're basically just sitting there saying, down the road, this money will be there, and I'll decide what to do with it when I get there. And then you get to this point in time where you quit your job like I did, and you're looking at your portfolio, and you say to yourself, this needs to last the rest of my life. But I don't know how long I'm going to live. I don't know what the rates of return are going to be. I don't know what inflation is going to be. I don't want to be put in a position where I have to go back to work or earn some money. I may be moving to a point in time where it will be difficult to go back to the job I had. So you get very conservative. You get very, I don't want to say nervous, but uncertain about the future. While many of us have read about the 4% rule that says over a 30-year time frame, given a 50% equity, 50% bond portfolio, historically, it has not run out of money in that period of time if you withdraw 4% of the original amount and adjust for inflation every year going forward. So that theoretically should be a conservative amount that you can live on for the next 30 years. And of course, that assumes you won't live more than 30 years. But that's the 4% rule, or rule of thumb, as it's become known. I wasn't willing to bet everything on that, so that didn't give me a lot of comfort, even though the math would suggest it should be fine. And then I found the website Early Retirement Now, where Big Earn, Karsten Jeske, has a 50-plus part series on safe withdrawal rates, and he goes through the math as well, and does it for time periods that are longer than 30 years. Different asset mixes, and various variables that he is looking at in addition to the simple ones that are in the 4% study, the Trinity study. And he comes to the conclusion that 3.25% is the ultimate safe withdrawal rate, doing the same thing, adjusting for inflation each year based on the starting value, and you should be fine. That gave me a little bit more comfort. But again, I was like, well, why don't I be even more conservative? And so I was withdrawing. Well, my first 2 years, I actually didn't withdraw at all. And I wrote a post about this, talking about the fun bucket, and I will link to that in the show notes. And my withdrawal rate has consistently been under 2%. I know everyone, Karsten included, would say, that's way too conservative. You can spend more than that. But that's what I was spending and I was comfortable doing. And I was at my friend Kevin's house before a campfire in California. And we were talking well into the wee hours of the morning. And he asked me what my spending rate was. And I told him it was below 2%. And he basically said, that's ridiculous. And I said, I don't really feel the need to spend more money. And he said, but you have the ability to, and you should. He said, what you need is a fun bucket. And I said, what is a fun bucket? And what does that do? And he said, basically, one of the risks of the 4% rule and big earned safe withdrawal series and so forth is having a bad sequence of returns at the beginning of your retirement. And in fact, not only did I not have a bad sequence, I actually had a good sequence of returns in the early part of my retirement. As a result, the 4% or 3.25% was likely way more conservative than necessary. And my 2% was just kind of ridiculous. But again, I didn't really see the need to spend more money necessarily. But as some people have put it, if you don't spend this money, your heirs certainly will. So the idea of the fun bucket is basically taking some of that excess that I had not been spending, especially in light of the good sequence of returns early in my retirement, and putting it off into a separate account. And in my case, I used a high yield savings account to put an amount of money over there to do things I wouldn't ordinarily do. That might be things as simple as hiring a house cleaner, but it also could include things like always flying a direct flight instead of going through a connecting city. Now I always fly at least premium economy on airlines like United or American or what have you. I always buy an early bird on Southwest that gives you better boarding position. I will frequently upgrade to first class. I'm still not good at this where I will do it at any price, but I will certainly do it at a reasonable price, which is something I would not have done previously. And I will also, if somebody says, hey, do you want to go to this event or do you want to do this trip? I am much more likely, if not always, in the position to say yes. It may also include things like going out to dinner with friends and not worrying about the bill or what it will cost. It has enabled me to get more comfortable spending the money that I know I can, but because it's identified as a fun bucket expense, it's much easier to do that than to try to fit it into this kind of safe withdrawal rate. I know it sounds strange. It's definitely my way of tricking myself, I guess you would say, but that's how I do it. And it has been really valuable. And what I've actually found is that a lot of the things that I will spend money on that come out of the fun bucket are actually still fitting in my regular expense structure. But I would not have done it had that money not already been allocated over in the fun bucket. So basically what I do is I reimburse myself from the fun bucket as necessary if my normal withdrawal rate doesn't already cover it. And some people also ask, well, how much did you put in the fun bucket? I like to think of it in percentage terms. So based on my normal annual spending, it's in the neighborhood of 25% of my annual spending that I funded it with. And it was for a 4-year period. We are already 3 years into the establishment of the fun bucket, and I have only spent about half of it, even though I have actually spent at that 25% rate. But like I said, some of that has fit within my normal spending pattern, so I did not have to reimburse myself. Once that fun bucket is depleted, I will refill it, most likely with another 4 years and somewhere in that neighborhood of 25% of my annual spending. So it's been a very good experience. I would highly recommend it if you are hesitant to spend money And especially if you are spending well below your ability to, whether it's the 4% rule or big earns 3.25% or however you define your safe withdrawal rate or spending rate that won't risk your plan not working. What I have found from this experiment is that I am doing a lot of activities with friends and family that I would not have ordinarily done, doing trips that are a little more extravagant, agreeing to do more of them, and creating numerous memory dividends, kind of like what is discussed in the book Die with Zero, which is so popular in the community these days. And I found it very beneficial. So it was a suggested trick for me to get comfortable spending. I know that sounds strange to talk about spending, but when you have been in the accumulation phase for a majority of your life, it is a very big adjustment to move from a savings mindset to a spending mindset, especially when the income spigot is completely turned off. So it's worked for me. You could try it. I think it would be beneficial, at least worth a shot. And it was definitely a mechanism to kind of rewire, retrain my brain to get comfortable with this concept of decumulating the portfolio over the remainder of my life. Thank you for listening to this week's show. Please click follow on your favorite podcast player or subscribe on YouTube to ensure you don't miss any future shows. And also, please leave a rating and review for the show. I've received a number of very, very nice ratings and reviews. Thank you so much. I've had well over 20 people leave a review. As I'd mentioned previously, the first 20 people who send me a screenshot of your review, along with your mailing address to me at mark@marksmoneymind.com, will receive some Mark's Money Mind swag. I have at least 10 more packets that I can send out, which is a little bit more than the original 20, but that's all right. I'll keep sending them out as long as I have them. So if you have already left a review and you haven't sent me your address, just take a screenshot and send it to me. Or if you haven't left a review, please do so. Send me a screenshot and I will send you some swag. If you would like me to answer a question on the show, please send it to me at mark@marksmoneymind.com and put podcast question in the subject line. Let me know your first name or let me know if you would like to remain anonymous and also your state of residence if you choose. I would also appreciate it if you would recommend the show to friends and family that might benefit from this content. See you next week on the Mark's Money Mind show. Until then, make some, save and invest, live on the rest. And now for the all-important disclaimer. This show is for education and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered investment, tax, or legal advice. Please consult the appropriate advisor or advisors before implementing anything you hear on this show or any other show for that matter. While I fully intend for everything on this show to be true and accurate at the time of each recording, occasionally errors may occur. So please do your own due diligence on anything discussed.